Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
Good question from Eric in our YouTube chat during the break. He said, what are the chances of Fernando Tatis Jr. ever joining the 50-50 club?
He's one of those guys that could has it in him, I think, so, if he's healthy.
I mean, he's hit 42 yep. in 130 games in 2021. His career high in stolen bases is 29, but he certainly has the speed to do it.
Let's go 30-30 first.
I think he absolutely could. I don't know that I want to see him go after it. For the same reason that what Shohei Ohtani has done, you're putting a lot of strain on yourself
yeah.
when you're stealing all those bags. I think part of the reason Shohei felt like, let's go for it this year.
Yeah.
He's not putting any strain by playing the field
right.
even 1 second of the season. So he got plenty in reserve. He's just sitting on the bench for, a good most of the game. And he gets out there, all right, let's do something while I'm out here at least.
Yeah, if the Padres draft, if a right field prospect popped up and was like, dude, this kid is unbelievable. We got to find a way to get him in the lineup. Toddy, you're going to be full-time DH next year, and you're just going to focus on hitting and running bags, which they never would do because he's got a rocket for an arm. He's a platinum glove
right.
winner. But in that kind of dumb scenario, yeah, I mean, I think when you don't play the field every day, and this is not a knock on Shohei. He is a pitcher that is rehabbing, which is the fact that he's done this. Like, hey, I had surgery on my elbow. I'll just go hit 50-150 right now and no big deal. But I do think Fernando, if he was just a full-time
right.
DH, yeah, I mean, it'd be crazy.
But
to see
I'd rather have him be around a 30-30 guy playing platinum glove defense.
Yeah, no question.
In right field than try to be a 50-50 guy. And I don't want to see him try to steal 50 bases and be playing 155 games out in the
yeah.
field doing the kind of sprinting and, leaping and diving that he does as a fielder out there. It's just not a fair comparison.
It's not. And I think that would be, we've talked about it a lot, but some of the guys that have played a lot of games this year, you get pretty worn out playing both ways. And for Shohei, not that it's not difficult what he's done. He's a freak. I've said it many times. So, not having the strain of going out to play right field or even first base and anything like that. Like it's helped him stay healthy.
So before we get to take on Woods, if you want to get online early, you can call 833-288-0973. We're a few minutes away. Update on the playoff chase from yesterday. So with the Dodgers 20-4 win over the Marlins, Padres fall 4 games behind the Dodgers with 9 to play. Now they do have the tiebreaker, and they have 3 head-to-head matchups. So essentially, for the Padres to win the NL West, they will need to sweep the Dodgers and finish 1 game better than them in the other 6.
Okay.
With the Padres playing the White Sox and Diamondbacks, and I believe all 6 for the Dodgers are against the Rockies. 3 in L.A., 3 at Coors Field. So, if you sweep...
Nice to see them get a break.
If you sweep the Dodgers... Well, I mean, you play the same schedule, so you can't complain too much.
Yeah, I've seen crazier things happen.
If you sweep the Dodgers, which is possible, you'd have to go, 5-1 against the Diamondbacks and White Sox and hope that the Dodgers go 4-2 against the Rockies or go 6-0 and hope the Dodgers just go 5-1. That's possible. If the Padres won out 9-0, then the Dodgers would only have to lose once to the Rockies and the Padres would win the division.
Yeah.
But that's not much margin for error. You lose once to the Dodgers, essentially you're going to need the Rockies to pull off 2 series wins or a sweep of the Dodgers. Probably not going to happen. So your best path is to either win them all or win all but one and get minimal help from the Rockies the rest of the way. Not impossible, but certainly not likely either. So 4 games back, 9 to play. In the wild card race, everybody won yesterday. The Arizona Diamondbacks got 12 strikeouts from Brandon Pfaadt, as they beat a slightly hungover looking Milwaukee Brewers team 5-1.
So, did you watch?
I watched a little bit of it, yeah. But I didn't see the interview, though.
So, they did. They go down to Rhys Hoskins, who was given the day off yesterday. And he is sitting on the sideline, and his face could only be, he could only be characterized as looking, well, very worn out. And, you know, usually in one of those in-game interviews, like, hey, I got the day off, and I'll, let's chop it up, let's have some fun. He was like, yeah, yep, no, it's been good, been happy. And then A.J. Pierzynski with just the best question ever, does it ever get old popping bottles? No, it never gets old.
All those bottles I pop.
Always fun to pop bottles and win divisions. He looked like he'd rather be anywhere else. He had the bubble guts going, the whole thing, eating antacid, you know, drinking electrolytes. I mean, he looked super hungover. His eyes looked all tired. But we got no help whatsoever at all.
So that the Arizona win pulls them within two of the Padres for the number one wild card slot. The tiebreaker remains up in the air. Whoever wins that last series will win the tiebreaker. So whatever the Padres hopefully lead is going into that series will be very important. If they're, let's say, up two games, then Arizona would have to sweep because you can't tie a series by just winning a series. Now, if they're only up one game going into that last series, then two out of three would be all Arizona would need to both tie the Padres and take the tiebreakers. So trying to stay two ahead of Arizona versus one ahead, very important over these next six games. Because if you lose one game, then Arizona goes into that last series going, hey, all we need is two out of three and we can pass the Padres. The Mets already own the tiebreaker over the Padres. They are also two games back after they beat the Phillies 10-6, four home runs. Taijuan Walker, not good. For the Phillies.
He's laying it in there, man.
And the Mets are three straight games with double digits. First time in franchise history, so they've been hitting even without Francisco Lindor, so no help there. And the Braves got a 15-3 over the Reds. I told you there was no chance the Braves would lose with Chris Sale on the mound, and they didn't. Michael Harris, two home runs, four RBI. They remain two games behind Arizona and the Mets, and four games behind the Padres. And, of course, the Padres have that tiebreaker. So while the magic number remains five, that's still a good place to be. And that any five wins combined with Braves losses clinches at least a playoff spot for the Padres. But they did not get any help whatsoever yesterday from the rest of the National League.
Well, I mean, the only help that the Padres get is that the Chicago White Sox are coming into town, and that's a team that you should beat. That's a team that you should handle. And listen, I'm not saying that they will, but, you know, we talked about on the roundtable yesterday, you know, I think Craig said you have to sweep this team, and I just...
Tony said, hey, just win a series, take two out of three.
Yeah, and I mean, I said the same thing, like going into this series saying anything less than a sweep is unacceptable. You're setting yourself up for failure here, man. It's hard to sweep a team, especially, again, a prideful team that does not want to be a part of history. Nobody wants to be a part of the worst team of all time. No one. And, you know, there's a couple of examples that had happened. And they've been playing better baseball lately in the Chicago White Sox because they don't want to be on that side of history. They will be bringing everything they have. Will it be enough? I have no idea. But, you know, based on their record, Ben, you should handle them.
Yes. Based on their record. 117 losses.
You should handle them.
Today is kind of the pivot game of the series. You know, that's their best pitcher.
Yep.
This is their chance to keep one close. That's kind of, you know one of the three is going to be close.
Yeah.
Because, like, in every series in baseball, even every sweep, it's rare that you win 9-1, 11-3, and, you know, 14-2. You have to win at least one close game to sweep a series generally.
If you're a Dodger fan listening or you're a Dodger fan online, you expected to sweep the Marlins. You didn't. They lost the first game.
They did.
And the fact that they won 20-4 yesterday doesn't negate the fact that they lost the first game. They all count as one.
Because there's probably going to be a close one somewhere in a series, and you got to figure out a way to win that close one. Dodgers didn't. Hopefully the same thing happens when they play the Rockies.
So, again, if you're sitting there here today as a Padres fan saying, if they don't sweep, we're dead. Number one, we're not. We're still in a good position. What you can't do, you can't lose this series. You can't.
Correct.
That's one where I'll go, you know what? Yeah, that's unacceptable. That can't happen. But even if that happened, if you drop 2 out of 3, you're still okay. You're still okay. The Mets are red hot. They're just red hot right now. You wonder when they'll come back to earth, if ever. They could be this year's Diamondbacks, the way that they're playing right now. But we could be this year's Diamondbacks. So makes it certainly fun. But it's not going to be an easy. It's not going to be an easy next couple of weeks at all.
No, it's not.
It's not.
And it's not easy to take down Woods in our musical trivia challenge. That's why the prize is so good. A trip to Las Vegas. Let's do it. It is time to take on Woods.
It's time for Take on Woods.
Woods. Woods.
Take on Woods is brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Only takes 15 minutes. You don't have to get out of your car. For directions and discounts, go to SoCalOilChange.com. That's SoCalOilChange.com. Pauly, I will let you choose.
Let's go with... How about Guy?
Guy! All right, we know Guy. He's always a very competitive contestant. Good morning, Guy. How are you?
Good morning, Ben. I'm doing great.
What's your morning look like?
Trying to fake it through the day at work before I get on a plane to Vegas tonight for the weekend.
Ah, nice. All right. Well, I mean, let's see if we can set you up with another trip here. You know how to do it. You got to at least beat or tie Woods in our 5-question musical trivia challenge. If you do, put you into the drawing later this month for the grand prize. 2 nights at Wynn or Encore Las Vegas, Swanky, and 2 tickets to Awakening, the thrilling spectacle at Wynn Las Vegas. It is on sale now, tickets at awakening.com. All right, you know how it works. So here are your category choices. An iffy category, 5 song titles to begin with the word if. Below the Waist, 5 songs that include a lower half body part in the title. And Happy Days, those are 5 song titles that include the word days. So, iffy category, Below the Waist, or Happy Days, Guy?
I'll try the iffy.
Iffy, all right. It's been sitting there for a while. Let's see how you do. Today we are looking again for 5 song titles that begin with the word if. 60 seconds to answer. You can pass if you don't know it. You know that. We'll try yours, 5, then Woods, and we'll compare and see how you do. First question is the 2-second song. Pauly going to play that music. You need to identify the song title and the artist to score the point. Guy, are you ready?
I am ready.
Pauly, you good to go? All right, Pauly's good. All right. Let's put 60 seconds on the clock. Again, an iffy category. Song titles beginning with the word if. Your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck, Guy. Let's take on Woods.
If You Leave Me Now by Chicago.
Correct. Which 1992 song by Bare Naked Ladies features 6 number 0s in its title?
Pat.
Huey Lewis sings Girls Don't Cry and Tell Me Nothing. Girl Don't Cry and Tell Me Nothing's Wrong. And You've Been Thinking That I've Been Drinking, in which 1983 hit?
If This Is It.
Correct. Cher wears a leather thong while performing.
If I Could Turn Back Time.
Correct. Which 2010 country song was the debut hit single for the band Perry?
If This Is Love.
Incorrect. Let's go back to which 1992 song by Bare Naked Ladies features 6 number 0s in the title?
God, I have no idea. If...
And there's a 1 in front of those 6 zeros, making it If I Had $1 Million... And then the band Perry's If I Die Young. Woods doesn't get any of the country either, though, guys. So usually his ceiling is 4. You got 3. We'll see if that's good enough here today and take on Woods. All right, Woods returns from his isolation, meditation, headphones on, Guy's score is locked in.
Oh, Guy.
60 seconds back on the clock. Woods does this without the safety net of the category. Your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck, Woods. Let's take on Guy.
Pass.
Which 1992 song by Bare Naked Ladies features 6 number 0s in its title?
If I Had $1 Million.
Correct. Huey Lewis sings Girl Don't Cry and Tell Me Nothing's Wrong and You've Been Thinking and I've Been Drinking, in which 1983 hit?
If This Is It?
Correct. Cher wears a leather thong while performing for sailors aboard the USS Missouri in a controversial music video for which 1989 hit?
Life After Love?
Incorrect.
Do you believe in Life After Love?
Incorrect. Which 2010 country song was the debut hit single for the band Perry? He hates the country.
Pass.
I go back to the two-second song.
If You Leave Me Now by Seals and Crofts.
Incorrect. Ah! All right, which 2010 country song was the debut hit single for the band Perry?
Perry's Taint.
Incorrect. And Guy, congratulations. You have beaten Woods 3-2.
Give me the category.
It's an iffy category. If I had $1 million, if this is it. They all start with the word if.
If You Leave Me Now.
It's Chicago, though.
Damn
not
it.
Seals and Crofts.
Idiot. And then if...
If I could turn back time. And then the band Perry is If I Die Young is what that one's called.
It's a weird name for a band. The band Perry. Right?
Yeah.
It's like Ruth's Chris. It doesn't make any sense. It's not Ruth Chris. It's Ruth's Chris. That doesn't make any sense.
That Chris belongs to Ruth.
The Chris is Ruth's.
It is. So, Guy, congratulations, by the way.
Way to go, Guy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
He's heading to Vegas anyway this weekend.
Oh, is he? All right.
Hang on the line. Paulie will put
tough,
your information
dude.
In.
Woo!
So, there was a steakhouse in New Orleans called Chris Steakhouse.
Chris's
Steakhouse. Ruth bought it.
Okay.
And then said, all right, now it's my steakhouse. So, it was Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. And thus, a franchise was born.
Ruth's.
Don't say you don't learn anything. Chris. Woods.
If you want news and notes about upscale steakhouses,
I'm the person to come to.
100%. Or a guy.
Speaking of steakhouse chains, so have you ever been to Morton's Steakhouse?
Love it.
No menu.
What do you mean no menu?
They don't give you a menu. They just come out and they bring out all and show you all the food. The steak
I don't
cuts,
remember that at all.
I've been to Morton's like 12 years.
I mean, you can ask for one if you want.
Oh.
But they will not actually present you with a menu. They will show you the meat, as it were. You don't know? You don't remember that? It's been a long time since I've been. At least that's what they used to do. I haven't been in a while.
I know that I've been to steakhouse. They bring out like the cuts of meat. This is the ribeye. This is the baseball.
That's Morton's. Yeah.
Okay.
That's
all
Morton's.
Right. Just give me the menu. I know what it is.
What about Smith and Walensky? Ever been to that one?
Delicious. Yes.
Known for their homemade steak sauce. Oh. There is very good.
Yeah, I love it.
One right there on the Vegas Strip, actually. I've been to that one for sure.
I have too. We need to get to a gentleman's steak dinner soon.
It's a wonder why we both take cholesterol and blood pressure medication.
At least I get my Shilajit in me, okay? Guy is a very, very worthy opponent.
He is. All right, Don't Do This is coming up next. Let's see. We have a NFL quarterback in trouble for going over the top on a celebration, and it's not the quarterback you might expect. Get to that and more coming up after a check of traffic with Ben and Woods here on 97.3 The Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly, beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Don't do this.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
3 stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why?
How many times do I have to tell you?
I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot. You moron.
You dumbass.
The apple sometimes does far fall from the tree.
Don't do this.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
I think it's always funny when one of the guys who is generally known as one of the more milquetoast and good guys in the NFL gets fined for doing something considered obscene, but that happened in the NFL. So we get to
this.
Don't do this here on a Friday.
Let that guy live, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Let him live a little bit.
You know, good start for the New Orleans Saints this season.
Yes.
2 really good games. And quarterback Derek Carr, who has had an up and down career, certainly has never gotten to the level of superstar, but he's always been considered. He's just one of the kind of the good guys in the league. So he scored.
He is very earnest.
Scored on a 1-yard sneak in the 44-19 rout of the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday, and then he did the old Michael Jackson crotch grab spin as his celebration.
Yes, just kind of grabbed it.
Which is that from? Is that Billie Jean? Which one did he do? I think all of them.
He just does it all the time.
It's
just like that's his signature move.
But apparently, so while the NFL has relaxed some of their touchdown celebration rules in the last few years, the current rule book says a player can be flagged for unsportsmanlike conduct for an act that is sexually suggestive or offensive. And while he wasn't flagged on the video, they said that is unsportsmanlike, though, and they fined him $14,069.
Come on.
Yes, they did.
That's amazing.
I think that is actually like a prescribed number, whatever percentage. It just happened to be $14,069.
He really did, man. He crashed through the line, and I was like,
That's the first time offender price for Derek Carr. He says he chose the celebration because he promised his family that he would do a Michael Jackson dance
if he scored a touchdown this season. My wiener.
Couldn't you just moonwalk or something?
Yeah, seriously. Oh man. Do you have two dude?
I've got another. Don't do this. And I mean, not necessarily anything that was completely controllable. But did you see on the 50th home run by Shohei Ohtani, the fan? Who had it right there.
Fumbled it, man.
Fumbled the catch.
Fumbled the bag.
And I have no idea what it's going to be worth. The guy who ended up with the ball did not give it back, though, to Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, he's keeping it.
He's
smart.
He's keeping it. He's not doing the old, give me a signed jersey and a photograph, and I'll give you this extremely valuable baseball.
That's a big one.
But it did. The don't do this goes to the guy in a teal, like he was wearing like a teal sweatshirt or whatever it was. Marlins fan, obviously, had it right there. It was falling right into his hands. And like, how much did you just drop there?
$10,000,
$20,000, $50,000? I don't know what it's going to be worth.
It's interesting because we were like, I was up McCovey Cove Dave. I was like, come on, bro. You got to give Elliot Ramos. I didn't mind that he didn't give it back. I think it was his comments about why he wouldn't give it back because Elliot Ramos has not earned it, and I'm a star, and he's not a star.
Yeah, that was the don't do this.
That's why this is a little bit
different. You don't have to give every single ball back. If you want to keep your ball, keep your ball.
Keep the ball, but that ball is going to be worth a tremendous amount of money.
And what's interesting about this is that in a 50-50 pursuit, it could have been a stolen base that he got it on. If he had gotten to 50 home runs first... Yeah, you can't, if it had been the bag...
No fan's going to run out and grab the bag.
MLB just pulls the bag out, and they've got that as the souvenir.
Yeah,
but on a home run, it goes into the stands, so now that's the moment he got the 50-50, and that's the ball.
So if you're Shohei...
That now has the most value.
Now, if you're Shohei, do you try to get the Dodgers to reach out and start a negotiation. I mean, listen, don't forget.
I mean, is it important to him? I mean, some players, it
some
is.
Players,
I mean,
it
we saw
be.
Dylan Cease and his 200th yeah. strikeout ball. He wanted that.
He wanted it.
But other players don't really care that much about the bits and pieces of the memorabilia.
I imagine the league probably wants that ball.
The league would
anybody.
Want it for the Hall of Fame, I would think, though.
Well, don't forget. I mean, you're talking about a guy that lost $16 million this year that was stolen from him that he had no idea was missing. Does he even have the cash to cover
he
a negotiation
might be,
yeah,
headed
right
to debtor's
now?
Prison
yeah,
at any moment,
that's
I'm
right.
sure.
I mean, and again, he doesn't even know. He doesn't even look at his bank account. So how would that even work?
Eric says, did the guy get the ball authenticated? I believe it was.
Well,
They've been subbing out special balls, so it would be very,
very
easy to authenticate.
Very curious indeed. Very curious indeed. Here's a doo-doo this.
D.D. Mega doo-doo.
So what was it? Last week, Paulie, we had Josh Rivera on.
Yes.
We interviewed Josh Rivera, who is the star of American Sports Story, Aaron Hernandez, which started on Tuesday night. Has anybody watched it? Did you guys watch it?
I have
it?
Not seen it yet.
Watch
the advanced screen.
The advanced screen is no big deal. It's no big deal. It's, you know, whatever. It's really, really good. They got their first reviews in. And again, let me tell you. We've interviewed actors, we've interviewed comedians, we've interviewed all kinds of people on this show. He might have been my favorite. He was so good on the air and such a great interview and seemingly a really good dude. They got some really, you know, Rotten Tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
The higher the number, the better the show.
Correct. Up to 100%.
Yeah. So they started at 85 Rotten Tomatoes.
Certified fresh.
Certified 85%. Fresh, man. I thought that was really cool, and I was really happy for him because he did such a great job at transforming
good.
Himself into a, yeah, you know, I mean,
a
psychopathic murderer. So, really well done. If you haven't watched it, I meant to tweet it the other night. I forgot, as usual. So, go watch it. It's on Hulu, FX, and it's so well done, and he just knocks it out of the park. So, very happy for him, man. Really good dude.
And that is Don't and Do This for a Friday.
That was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
In case you missed it, had a very special guest in studio yesterday. I believe sitting in the chair that Woods is sitting in right now, Steven Strasburg. Some very of his first post-retirement comments.
I feel like my velo just went through the roof just by
sitting.
I would think,
just
sitting
right
from
there.
From 61 to 64.
Sitting with his good friend and fellow Aztec, Tony Gwynn Jr. yesterday. Got a couple of those comments for you. We can talk about that next with Bennett Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fam. Does that chair feel any different to you this
it does,
morning?
Man. Yeah, it feels like a World Series MVP sat in it. He was World Series MVP, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nuts.
Aztec for Life, Steven Strasburg, in studio yesterday with Tony Gwynn Jr. and Matt Scraby, and sharing just some of his thoughts. Obviously, it was a bit of a, I don't want to say controversial retirement, but it wasn't the fun end of your career, smooth retirement that some guys get.
No, there was no riding off into the sunset.
Yeah, you had the whole situation with the contract, with the Nationals going, well, I mean, if you're going to retire, we're not going to pay you. And
right.
He's like, okay, then do I have to just show up to spring training just to sit there so I get my money?
Shag flies.
Because I can't pitch
Strasburg
anymore. Yeah.
Earlier when we were talking about like Tua and, you know,
yeah.
all that guaranteed money if he were to retire from all these concussions. And it was different, but similar to Strasburg,
sure.
who retired earlier than he had planned, signed that huge contract, and then it's like, well, hang on, what happens here?
Right, what happens? And it's, you know, investing in a pitcher like that. But again, like I think about the Nationals and what he did for them and what he can hang his, you know, hat on is I pitched you to a World Series. I was the MVP. And again, they paid him after that.
Right. With
that
the
happened.
Money, it comes down to, it's a kind of chicken and the egg.
Yeah.
Are you paying him for what he's accomplished or what you're hoping he will accomplish?
I think both.
And it's a little bit
it's
of
a little
both.
Bit of both.
I always find the story of Steven Strasburg fascinating, Phil, because in high school, I started at West Hills in Santee.
Mm-hmm.
And as a junior, he was 1-10.
Wow.
As a junior. Not someone that's going to be on a lot of radars in terms of draft or college scholarships. But then, you know, he had a really good senior season after transferring. No, he stayed at West Hills. And then he had a good senior season, 1.68 ERA, and of course, was recruited. He wanted to go to Stanford, but didn't. And he ended up, of course, enrolling at San Diego State and playing for Tony Gwynn of the Aztecs, Tony Gwynn Jr.'s dad. And he got in better shape. He was kind of a little overweight, but he found physical fitness, essentially, and it really turned around his career, and he kept adding velocity, and to the point where he became maybe the highest profile college pitcher that we had seen up to that date.
Yep.
The no-hitters, the strikeouts, I mean, his starts truly were must-see events.
Must
in
attend.
College baseball. And college baseball is not usually a must-see kind of sport, but it was when he was there. Friday nights, he would pitch, and it was like, okay, all attention is on San Diego right now and what Steven Strasburg is doing.
He graduated the year before I came down to go to San Diego State, but I had a buddy who was a couple years older than me, worked in the athletic department to make some money, and he was like an usher or whatever, and he goes, dude, Friday nights was the toughest ticket in San Diego at
that
time. Like, it was... That was the place to be if you were a sports fan, was Friday nights at Tony Gwynn Stadium to watch Strasburg pitch.
I was working at 94.9 when he made his major league debut and
never forget
cut
it.
Up audio and played it on the you know, I'm in the middle of playing Milky Chance, Stolen Dance. I'm like, I got to get this story. I mean, it was pretty nuts.
So, yeah, gets drafted number one overall June of 2009 by the Washington Nationals. And, you know, his hype was very big, you know, when everyone was watching him ready to make his major league debut. Very similar to what we've seen with Paul Skeens, another number one overall pick. We know you do with the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Paul Skeens,
a college star who, you know, his starts were kind of created a lot of buzz in college. And then, you know, how quickly is he going to get up to the big league? So kind of interesting when he talked with Tony yesterday about, you know, Paul Skeens and any advice he would have for Skeens here in the beginning part of his career.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's funny because I was kind of at the early stage of like the next, you know, let's hype up every prospect, right?
And yes, you were.
Yeah, and I just looking from afar, it's like you don't, you know, I didn't really understand what was going on at the time. I was young, and I was like, I felt really uncomfortable being in the clubhouse and being around these guys that I idolize, these veterans. I mean, I'm throwing to Pudge Rodriguez as a rookie. And it was just weird to me. It didn't really sit
well.
And
all the attention was on you.
Yeah,
and you had these vets that had been in there for a while.
And it's just, you know, it's easy to be, you know, labeled the savior of the franchise. And, you know, that's a lot of weight that you have to put on, that you could put on yourself. But I would say just like, you just have to enjoy it. Like, there's going to be highs, there's going to be lows, and it's all about just finding those ways to get better every single day. Like, this is just a long career. You know, his next start, it's not just that start. Like, there's many more starts down the road, and just really look at it from the perspective of like, you know, this is going to be a long career, and I just want to know at the end of the day that I, you know, turned over every stone and I gave it everything I possibly could.
You know, I covered Steven Strasburg back in college. I was, you know, already doing the Channel 10 stuff. And he was not nearly as, like, polished and, like, you know, he was finding his way back then. It's good to hear him, you know, with the perspective of time and what he's learned. I'm sure he would love to be able to go back and give that advice to himself at the beginning of his career.
Yeah.
But sometimes you just have to live through it
and experience it
for yourself. But that was on Paul Skeens. He also talked a little bit about the Padres super rookie, Jackson Merrill. Not a pitcher, of course, but someone who has broken through with incredible speed here in Major League Baseball.
Hi,
making
this
an
is
impact.
Jackson
yes,
Merrill.
That's him. And here's Steven Strasburg on 97.3 The Fan on Jackson Merrill.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard thing to do. I think when you get the first taste of, you know, going through to the finish line, especially when you come from, you know, shortened minor league season or like with Skeens, like college season and stuff, that, you know, there's going to be some, you know, I guess physical breakdown at some point. But when you're staying consistent with that and you've kind of proven that, you know, you belong, you know, that's one thing that, you know, it doesn't come along very often. And in a way, I feel like it's, you know, that could be a little bit harder from a position player standpoint, because, you know, starting pitcher, like, you can go out there and be lights out, but you're pitching once every 5 days, 5-6 days. And, you know, when you start to, like, change the rotation around just from a long-term health perspective, like, those position players, they're grinding, they're playing through injuries. And to be able to have that, you know, professional sense and like feel to still go out there and perform. You know, it's impressive when you see a guy that young be able to do that.
You know, we probably don't talk about it enough. Again, that was Steven Strasburg with Tony Gwynn Jr. yesterday. Jackson Merrill has had remarkably few slumps, cold spells. He had one right really early in the season. He had one other kind of mini one.
He was at he was 2-for-18 when I landed in San Francisco, and then just proceeded to go off all weekend in San Francisco as well. So he's really been a really good adjuster.
The fact that he's been able to avoid what Steven Strasburg was talking about, that the first 162 game season where you have never played anything like that. Remember, a college baseball season, high school baseball season, I mean, what is it, 30 to 40 games tops, minor leagues, and they're being careful with you. Yeah, he's playing maybe 100, you know, nothing like a major league baseball season and the day-to-day grind and the travel and the flights and everything. It's just not the same. And almost every rookie goes through that August, I'm just running out of gas. And sometimes you get that second win, playoffs are coming, whatever. But Jackson Merrill, for the most part, has avoided that and has remained remarkably consistent and continued to produce through the entirety of the summer. And now he's hot again. I mean, he's swinging the bat well right at the end of the season when you want to make sure he's swinging the bat well.
Yeah, and it's one of the questions I want to ask Shilty today about, you know, moving him up. And how does that conversation go? What was the impetus behind it? Obviously, you know, he's a good hitter. But it's got to be a little nerve-wracking to make. And that's, you know, moving a guy up two slots may not seem glaring to you and I and people in the audience. But again, when you talk to Tony Gwynn Jr. and he's talking about, hey, man, hitting the 7-hole in the big leagues is different than hitting in the 5-hole. It just is. It's just a different.
But Jackson will never say that.
No,
it doesn't matter
not.
To me. I'm just a ball player. My question to you is, do you believe that, or is that something he's trying to speak into existence?
I think you speak it into existence, and again, you just don't try not to change anything. I'm not going to change a thing about what I'm doing. I just may have more guys on base. I may have Manny and Tatis standing on second and third waiting for me, Jackson Merrill, the 21-year-old rookie, to drive them in.
Slightly different role, maybe.
Tell me that doesn't. That's not different.
I mean, he says, hey, I'm just looking to hit the ball, just hit a line drive every time. I don't change my approach.
Yeah.
I'm never thinking about hitting a home run. Really? Really?
Well, they all say that.
Yeah, I know.
But is he
actually like 100% believe everything that he's saying?
I think that, you know, that's been the Padres' approach this year. There was just an article written about this. And somebody, the quote of it was, well, if hitting home runs is really hard, why would we try to hit home runs? And I went, wow, yeah.
Victor Rodriguez.
Victor said that. Yeah. So last year, you saw guys trying to go tank, right? But I think once you start scuffling as a team, you're like, I got to get a big fly here.
I don't fully buy that. I mean, it's working for the Padres,
yeah.
But you know, there are guys, I think most Major League Baseball players, and tell me if you agree with this, they do have a home run swing.
Sure.
And they'll break it out. Okay, I'm up in the count 3-1. I am looking for this. And I am going to swing hard. Because generally, you need to swing hard to hit a home run. You can't just put your, like, Luis Arraez.
Unless you're Manny.
There's some outliers. But for the majority, the middle-level baseball player, the guys who hit, like, 10 to 20,
yeah,
they have to be trying to hit a home run to hit a home run. And I thought Jackson Merrill was going to be that guy. But here he is with 24 home runs without ever looking like he's swinging for a home run. I didn't think that was possible. I didn't see that coming for Jackson Merrill.
Yeah, it's about 14 more than I had as his ceiling. Really, just looking at his swing and watching how
not even this year, but like career wise. He's going to be a 15-20 homer guy.
I had him this year
at his peak
at 10. You know, if he stays healthy, he can hit 10 home runs this year. You know, and to blow past that, because I watched his approach so early in the season, and I went, the guy just will take the outside pitch. He's not looking to pull it. He just hits it through the 5-5. He takes his line drives, takes his singles, takes his doubles. But man, when he gets something middle in, makes an adjustment, it's over.
All right, we need to take a quick check of traffic. We have a few more minutes this hour, though, and I know since we got Jake Mintz coming up at the top of the hour, you want to kind of move up our little reset here, and you have something you actually wanted to bring up.
Well, I was thinking about Strasburg and Little League. You have tier ones out there that have faced him, but it's got me. I have to do something that I'll explain. It's going to take up like 48 hours of my time, and I need your help.
Okay. That's coming up after traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. So I'm trying to think, what is it that could take 48 hours of your time involving Little League? That doesn't seem right.
So you realize I've only coached T-ball to this point until this weekend.
Now you've gotten into
Pinto.
Coach pitch or machine pitch?
I did coach pitch too, but that was different. I pitched. So you could just do the lineup. Kids could play anywhere. Well, now you get up to the little bit different division. So I'm scrolling through the rules last night to be prepared. Make sense of this for me. You ready? Because you're good at this stuff.
I am.
Each player must play at least four innings defensively in a game that goes full six innings and shall not rest in consecutive innings. No player shall sit two innings until each player has sat at least one inning. No player may play more than two innings at any one position per game except first base and catcher. These players are allowed to a maximum of three innings at first base or catcher per game. Catcher must play three innings with full gear. Catchers not in full gear must be at the back of the batter for safety reasons. Each player must play at least one inning of outfield. Each player must play at least two of the first five innings in an infield position. Each player must play at least one of the first five innings in an outfield position. Each player may not play more than four innings of infield. The coach and the parents may only waive this rule after consultation and concurrence by league director prior to each game. You tell me how in the
by penalty of death.
How in God? How on God's green earth, guys? I got nine players coming on.
I got it.
Nine players coming on Sunday.
This is very easy. Don't worry about it, because if anybody calls you out on it, they are a psychopath that should be nowhere near a Little League field. I've been watching Johnny all day. He's only played three innings in the infield.
I read this thing.
Holy crap!
I read this thing 40 times, and I wrote notes. I listed players. I started to do like, okay, if Bo plays first, he can only Ben. So
what I would recommend.
Well, here's my other question to you: what are we doing?
You're trying to make sure that there's no kids get left behind and get stuck on the bench, and everyone gets an opportunity to play all the positions.
I can do
this. Is to prevent parents who just want to make their kids stars from putting them at shortstop the whole game and
what
ignoring
if my kid
the other
is
players.
The best shortstop
doesn't matter,
but
got to move them around. This is not the level for it, and eventually you get to that level. Here's what I would quickly recommend, just based on what you just said, and I stopped listening about halfway through. But
yeah, I figured.
I would recommend creating a pod system. So, like, each four players are in a pod, and they rotate one inning, like, in infield, outfield, on the bench throughout the game. So they
infield,
keep moving.
Infield, outfield, bench.
Yeah,
infield,
and
outfield,
you've got different
bench.
Pods. So you've got a right field, a center field, a left field, and then you've got – they're also in the infield pods where they move around, and you make sure that – each guy kind of moves and rotates throughout the game,
okay.
So they get all their positions and their innings in to remain in compliance with the most complicated Little League rules I've ever heard in my life.
I wonder if that's like a nationally adopted rule type thing, or if it's just in Sanitas Little League.
So here's the thing,
ask our next guest, Jake Mintz. He coaches Little League out in the Bronx.
Again, when I didn't start playing Little League until I was 10, but when I was 10,
Coach said, Mike Schilt do it for you.
Yes, I will. I'll run these
that's
by him.
Idea.
All right, Schulte, do you have time today? If you could you?
I need some help. Here are the rules. How do I do this, Mike?
Paulie, when I turned 10, you know what the coach said? Get in right field and stay there until I tell you to sit on the bench.
You get your minimum two innings, and that was it.
God.
All right, I'm looking forward to this at 9 o'clock when Mike Schulte solves Woods' Little League dilemma.
You thought your rules were tough?
Yeah. What? You know, you got a three-pitcher batter minimum? Whatever. Jake Mintz next.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.